Hello, I'm Paul Fain. Welcome to an Inside Higher Ed podcast. Stephen Gunderson is the new president of the Association of Private Sector Colleges and Universities, the primary for-profit college trade group. Gunderson, a former moderate Republican congressman from Wisconsin, is widely seen as a bridge builder. We sat down with Gunderson and asked if he plans to work with traditional higher education or the for-profit industry's critics. Among other things, we learned that he himself is a graduate of a for-profit college. Now on to the conversation. To jump right in, I think a lot of folks, given your background and your reputation, are thinking that you might strike a more conciliatory, cooperative tone across all sorts of spectrums. So is that true? Is that what you hope to do? And if so, how?
Well, great question. I can't speak to the past. Wasn't there... Don't know, but I'm a bridge builder. It's everything that I do is politics of inclusion, bringing people together, setting ideology aside to get real outcomes. And I think that's the reputation that I had on Capitol Hill. I think it's sort of the mode of operandus I've had since I left the Congress. It's what I want to do because I really believe that we're at that point in America, if not globally, where the demands for post-secondary education are incredible. Every element of the diversity of our workforce, the diversity of our workplace, demands a similar response by the diversity of our post-secondary education sector. And I have made very clear to my colleagues at the association that we don't criticize any of our colleagues in anything. You know, I mean, if they choose to at some point in the future go out and totally undercut us, we will respond to that. But we will not ever. You'll never see a statement by Steve that is critical of public universities, community colleges, four-year nonprofits. I mean, I think each one of us fits a very unique and very important mission within the whole higher education sector.
Well, let me ask, though, even in the context of saying, hey, look, this sector, let's say two-year public institutions, also at times struggles with graduation rates, or, I mean, even to kind of bring others into the conversation that you feel you're being targeted?
Oh, I mean, there's no question that we all want to move towards one set of rules and regulations for all of higher ed. It's not critical that in any way, shape, or form, because that means everybody'd have to give a little bit to get there. But absolutely, you know, we don't think there is a strong justification in today's world to have two different sectors, two different definitions, so to speak. So we hope that reauthorization will allow us to move in that direction.
So optimistic that you'll be able to work with folks on the Hill or even in the executive branch who haven't always been friends to the sector?
I'm not naive. I'm not overly idealistic, but I am an optimist. So I start with that premise. Second, I think we change the conversation. You know, if this conversation is about providing post-secondary education and training to between 8 and 23 million you choose to study over the next 15 years, then if that's the goal, there's only one way we meet it, and that's if everybody is a part of that solution. I mean, otherwise, there's just no way to deal with it. I mean, you can't do it otherwise with the cut in state and federal funding. And frankly, I think the reality is that, and I'm a really big believer in public-private partnerships. One of the reasons I wanted this job was because I believe the private sector is going to have to find a way to invest the capital to expand our services in a way that helps meet, contributes to meeting those goals.
Do you? We haven't heard a lot of examples. I don't know if they exist or not, of for-profit higher education working with other aspects of higher ed, traditional higher ed, to advocate for the industry on issues like, say, Pell Grants or other kind of shared goals. Do you think you can do some of that? Actually, work hand in hand with one DuPont?
I hope so. I mean, it was very interesting because I was, when my selection was announced, I was actually in Miami at the American Association of Community Colleges Workforce Investment Institute, and I had speeches on the front end and back end, and the announcement came out, and Jim McKinney and everybody was saying, you know, how do we, David Bain and everybody, how do we handle this? And of course I go to the president's reception, and there are a whole bunch of community college presidents there, and one of them says, so what are you doing now? And I said, well, as of yesterday I was announced as, and she said, oh, you're the competition. And I said, if I'm the competition, if we're the competition, then I said, that everybody gets hurt by that, especially the students. I said, we can't look at ourselves that way. And so it gave me a real opportunity when I gave my keynote speech to just get up. And frankly, Jim McKinney, in introducing me, he said, you know, Steve had this experience last night, and he said, if we're seen as the competition, everybody loses. And that's the kind of guy he is. That's why we invited him here, and that's why we look forward to working with him. And you know, you saw it, and whoever wrote the announcement, some very nice things by my colleagues in One DuPont Circle. Terry, I'm having lunch with Terry on Friday. I mean, you know, I've got a lunch with Jim McKinney and Bob Jones from the Department of Labor. You know, we just go way back. And I won't name the name, but one of our state association guys, my colleagues at the association said, we just not have a good relationship with this person. And so we happened to get on the phone, and I said, well, I look forward to meeting you and all that. And this person said, Steve, we've worked together in the past on workforce investment stuff. And so we started trading names of all of our friends that we knew and all of that. And we got a great relationship going. And so I hope I can bring that. But, you know, I think that's where the board selected me.
Sure.
I hope to do it.
Obviously, you know, there are some folks, I mean, higher ed's a competitive industry, all things, who you know, probably don't want to work with for-profits. Have you gotten any negative feedback from folks you've worked with in higher ed in the past about even taking the position?
No. I mean, it frankly, if they feel that way, I'm probably not the first person they're going to share that with. And I understand that. I told the board when I was being interviewed, I said, I think with some of my friends in higher ed, it would be an aha moment when they heard that I was coming, if you were kind enough to select me. And that may have happened. You know, David Ward, who was at ACE, was a close friend from my University of Wisconsin days, and actually he's got a great quote I'll share with you that I used in all my interviews about that he used with The Guardian in the UK about the reality of recognizing the diversity of higher education delivery in today's era. And this will happen over time. Competition is not bad, but that doesn't mean you can't have cooperation within a competitive enterprise or sector.
Sure.
Is higher ed.
Sure. You know, I think that a lot of folks, you know, in the Beltway, general public, media, think of for-profits as being kind of this monolithic, uniform entity where, you know, there's University of Phoenix, and so that's pretty much what we're talking about, right? You know, and I think that you all may have at times not done much to change that, to kind of talk about stratification.
Yeah.
Do you feel like as the industry evolves, it's time to do more of that or not?
I actually do, and it's interesting you bring that up because the conversations with some of my members in the meet and greets that have happened over the last 3 weeks, I've heard a little bit of that. You know, well, we're not like them, and I go, well, so I mean, why can't we celebrate our diversity in the delivery system? And build on that. And as you know, we talk about standards and all those kind of things, and everybody goes, well, how do you put Phoenix and this family school that's doing whatever, their mechanics or business school or whatever, how do you put them all in the same set of standards? I go, why do you have to have the same set of standards? Why do you have to have one size fits all? You know, when I was at the Council on Foundations, we had different standards for family foundations and community foundations and corporate grant-making programs and international grant-making. And why do we need one set? I mean, let's figure out what works within some basic levels here. I think that will... The real important thing here is if you go to the general public and you say Phoenix University, Strayer University, University of Wisconsin, they don't know the difference, and they frankly don't care. So why do we spend all that time on it if the consumers who are going to come to our schools don't?
Do you feel like, though, that there's kind of two conversations? There's the conversation in Washington about quality and access, and then there's the ones with the folks who actually go to most higher education institutions?
No question about it. You know, I'm a graduate of a for-profit college, by the way. After I finished the University of Wisconsin, I wanted to be a sports broadcaster. And I decided that I got great theory at the university. I'm a big Badger fan, big alumni, you know, all those kind of things. Actually, was first runner-up for president of the University of Wisconsin system. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here today had I gotten that job. But I decided that I wanted to be a sports broadcaster and that I didn't have a practical. And so I went to Brown School of Broadcasting in Minneapolis. And it was an incredible benefit. And it was a really great benefit for me because I did that on top of a four-year liberal arts education. But if any of you were sports fans, one of the things they did is, you know, they took us to the Minnesota Twins games and we sat in the broadcast booth that wasn't being used and we got all the data and we just broadcast those games like we were doing it live on the radio. Now, that's the kind of real-life practical education and experience that you never lose. And so I don't find this competitive, you know, out there in the real world. I have a sister who's a year older than I am. She has an associate degree. She raised six boys on her own, left an abusive husband, thank God. And she said to me, she said, "You have no idea how much I want you to get that job because I want to complete my higher education, and those are the kind of schools I want to do it at because they would fit where I'm at in my life right now." She runs a title company in small town rural Wisconsin. She would love a business management course, but she knows that she's not the kind of person to go onto a campus in a four-year program and take that course every day, you know, that type of thing. So I look at that and I go, if I can help those kind of people, what a great gift and opportunity.
Sure. Well, last question here. Yeah. Obviously, there are some challenges the industry faces, enrollments, et cetera. I think some people feel like the policy battles, some of that energy has moved to the states. Do you feel like that's true, and is that something you're focused on?
Well, it's going to become more important. You can't, in a global economy, say nothing of a national economy, where you are preparing people for the workplace, have 51 different sets of rules and regulations for how we deliver higher education. I mean, and as you know, especially when you move towards the use of technology and distance learning and stuff like that, the degree to which we can get symmetry or best practices or whatever, everybody would benefit from that. Within that context, I think our association has a real special responsibility to work very closely with our state associations to see how we can move from where we are to where we're going to need to go. And the worst of all worlds for us would be that if we are able to solve all of the challenges at the federal level, they are taken up by 50 different state attorney generals and 50 different state licensures and 50 different state legislatures, then how do you manage that? And so just to get some kind of cohesion and symmetry, we've got to look to ways to address that. I think the National Association can be helpful by a convening role and a facilitating role among all of our states with the state associations and developing some best practices and ways to approach that.
If I ask one question, you talked at the beginning about not wanting to criticize other sectors. Do you feel how much a part of the association's role going forward do you see it being calling your own members to account and sort of differentiating among them in terms of quality, performance? I mean, how do you see the association setting expectations? We've got these other groups sort of setting up these codes of conduct, which people have very mixed feelings about, I think. But what role do you see the association playing in setting standards and holding the schools themselves accountable?
First of all, transparency almost always in a market, especially. Transparency would preclude the need for regulations because then, thanks to those of you in the press, everybody will know what's happening. So I'm a big, and I've said, I think, three times already this morning to folks, let's be very transparent about what we do, first and foremost. So I think that starts. Second, I've had some real experience on this whole development of standards, and no association, no sector will ever succeed in standards when you start with the premise that one size fits all, and then you start at the top and go down. If you don't start at the bottom and work your way up in the development of standards, there won't be any buy-in because they're scared. They fear an imposition on you, and that you don't understand. Probably you don't. So what you really need to do is start at the bottom and work up on the development of those standards. Now, I haven't even had a board meeting, one of the questions that I want to get into with my board is, all right, how do we go from where we are to where many of you want to be in a way that brings everybody comfortably along in the process? And I think, while I'm not a process guy, I'm much more an outcomes guy, I think process matters in some places, and this is one of those where I think process matters.